Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
College Ball Show is back. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to discuss everything revolving around the great sport, especially the regular season, of college football. We are back, and boy, do we have a whole lot to talk about on the show tonight. Now, obviously, we're going to start with recap from week six, and we saw a lot more, even more movement inside the top 25 this week, featuring a few huge upsets. Texas, I think you could put that under there. Beating Oklahoma, LSU going down, Auburn going down. A variety of games turning out a really strange way at some point. Some of this we had talked about, like Auburn. You know, are they going to really show their true colors here at some point on offense? That didn't seem to be the case if you look at the scoreboard and whatnot and, you know, the last month of games. But anyway, we definitely got to start with that recap. Of course, we got to take a look at next week, week seven. You know, we're going to preview, debate, and predict all the marquee matchups and the games flying under the radar for week seven. They got number 2, Georgia versus number 13, LSU. You have number 7, Washington, versus number 17, Oregon. Big game for both, obviously, but especially Oregon. It's a chance to really separate. Well, I shouldn't say separate themselves. They really need a key victory, I guess is what I'm trying to say, to kind of pile on what they got going on this season. Also, number 12, Michigan, versus number 15, Wisconsin. And like I said, a variety of games that are flying under the radar. We're degenerates over here. And I don't mean it in a negative way. I mean gambling degenerates, okay? And so we talk lines against the spread, you know, certain betting lines that just look good to us. So we'll talk about that as well. Now, if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, we started late August. Take college football, regular season, bowl season, national championship, all the way to the final game, which is right around, you know, mid-January. We even do a post-game show. We don't do a game after the show. That didn't make any sense. But so we take that there, but it's called the College Ball Show because once college football is done, then we go to college basketball. We take that all the way through March Madness in the national championship. And then we figure, hey, if you're watching college basketball, you know, time in the spring, there's a good chance that you have interest in the NBA playoffs. And then we go to the NBA playoffs after that, take it all the way to the finals, into June and July for free agency. But that's a far, far way out. So, but also, we do stream it live right here, the College Ball Show. It's under the Rope It Up Radio podcast umbrella. We stream it live at blogtalkradio.com/Rope It Up Radio. Stream live at archives here. Like I said, it's basically the headquarters. You can archive it right here, but you can also catch it on iTunes, a.k.a. Apple Podcasts, Player FM, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn. A whole lot of places where you listen to pods, you'll find us. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. Okay, you can head on over to thegruelingtruth.net And the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network is available at all the places I just, you know, talked about and more. You can stream it on iHeartRadio. You can also stream it on Spotify. So head on over to the GruelingTruth.net. You can listen to the College Ball Show there and a variety of other. You got football, basketball, baseball, boxing, and everything in between. They're even talking CFL, for Christ's sakes. Head on over to GruelingTruth.net. They got a great sponsor over there, MyBookie.ag. That's MyBookie.ag. I'm going to bring in my co-host now and see what's going on with him. What's going on, Marshall? How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. Just had the day off because it was like State Fair Day or Columbus Day or whatever. So I actually did go to the Texas State Fair. We'll get to that game. That was quite a day. But yeah, I'm good, man. It's just a good time of year for all sports, but obviously college football being our main focus. We had another pretty decent weekend, my friend.
Yeah, I think pretty decent is pretty much an understatement. And, you know, where else are we going to start? There is a lot of games to talk about. I already mentioned at the top of the top of the show, LSU went down, Auburn went down. We're about to talk Oklahoma going down. Other top 25 programs went down. Some of them just scraped by, like the Miami Hurricanes and a couple others. So we're going to cover it all, but we might as well start with what was the game of the week. Kind of heading into it, and it definitely turned out to be the game of the week. The Texas State Fair, man. I love how they do it in the huge stadium, 100,000, 48-45, a back-and-forth game that looked like, okay, Texas is running away with this. Oh, my God, they're way up. They're going to end it. It's over, dude. This is crazy. But then all of a sudden, Oklahoma storms back, ties the thing at 45 apiece, and, took a nice drive, a nine-play drive by Texas to kick the game-winning field goal. Oklahoma didn't really have much of a chance after that, But first of all, before we start breaking down the game in detail, just tell us, since you went there, tell us about the atmosphere, getting to your seats. Did you sit in a Texas, section or Oklahoma section, or just kind of give us a feel, and then we'll get into this game. And we also have to, once we start breaking this game down, I think it's only right to give this quarterback for Texas some props, because we haven't been that nice to him on the show, and he had his game, maybe his best game of all time. It will be, who knows? But tell us just the atmosphere, man, because it looks like just a great time. No matter what the hell the score is,
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The fair doors opened at 7. I was there at about 7:45. I think I had a beer in my hand right around that time. So the day's off to a good start. I would say it was 99% friendly. So that kind of makes it fun, too. Obviously, with that day being the game day, a majority of the people in the fair are either wearing either crimson or burnt orange. So it was just kind of a cool environment, besides a couple of, drunk, fools who happen to be in any sporting event. It was just kind of a fun thing to do. The guy I went with is one I went to the Oklahoma game with earlier this year against UCLA. So I didn't sit with my friend exactly this game, but he got me a ticket. So I was in the Oklahoma section, blast the stadium, fun game. It is cool how they split the field. It's kind of like in a U. So your Oklahoma fans on the, I guess it'd be the south side, and north side is all Texas, and they go literally go down the 50. So if you happen to have a 50-yard seat, you could be sitting next to the guy of the opposing color, because there's not a railing in between where the true 50 is. So, yeah, just a very fun place. The Faraday, it's just a festive environment. It is kind of weird going to a football game where your cheering is only kind of beneficial to the games in your end. Like, you know, if you went to an Oklahoma or a Texas football game and your team is on defense, you'd be cheering for them throughout the whole game. But when you're on the far end of the stadium and your team is playing defense on the other end, your cheering really doesn't matter. Not that people were like dead silent, but it's kind of hard to scream for your team in a fan way when they're surrounded by their whole fans. Obviously, they're not going to make noise on offense. So it's kind of, it really is kind of a whole different experience. Speaking of screaming on defense, Chris, there was a lot of screaming. Most of it wasn't really acceptable language. And that is the game of the year for those Oklahoma fans. But even then, come the third quarter, even the thought of standing up and cheering, it was drowned out. I mean, for the whole game, Texas's offense was basically unstoppable. The one standpoint that I didn't quite get, and I realize that I'm only a guy who's coached middle school football, and I've watched football in my life. I'm not an elaborate college mind, but the thing that I didn't get was, okay, if Texas had great wide receivers, and you're convinced you're going to leave your DBs on an island guarding them, and they can't do that, okay, that's tough. So if you're going to leave your cornerbacks by themselves against big physical receivers, you might as well blitz the quarterback. It was a sense of, okay, we're going to leave our guys one-on-one, which is a mismatch, and we're also only going to rush four people. It's like, well, what the hell? I mean, if you're going to give quarterback time to dissect you and you don't even rush him, it's just the game plan, it didn't seem to make sense whatsoever. They could never get a pass rush. Their DBs couldn't make a play to save their lives. Their tackling was poor. It seemed like Texas never got tackled behind the line of scrimmage other than a few times. But so in the first, the game starts off, Oklahoma drives on the field and scores like it's nothing, 7-0. Everyone's pretty happy. And then, Oklahoma's offense got a little stagnant, and Texas's just never did. Now, to look at a different point of this is the fact that Kyler Murray's a great quarterback. Their offense has been sick this year, blah, blah, blah. Toughest game he's ever played in. I wish that kind of hit me during the game where I was like, you know what? Murray's not having a great game. Well, shit, this is the biggest environment he's ever been a part of. He's going to be a pro baseball player. He's an incredibly talented athlete, and he's a good quarterback, but he's never been in a situation like this. So that pick he threw was an awful pass. His decisions weren't the best. I think it kind of hit him as, this wasn't a great performance from his part, but also he probably had some jitters get to him. You're at a state fair rival game. You got a kid, he's probably playing against guys he went to high school with from Allen. So maybe the emotions got the better of him, at least
well,
for that middle
too,
part of the game.
Because the was, team oh, as well, though.
Yeah.
The team itself.
Oh, sure. Oh.
Because Murray, he didn't have this horrendous game you're talking about, though. I mean, he still had a pretty good game. He made a couple of bad passes. That fumble thing was weird. But, I mean, he was 9-26 for four touchdowns and ran for almost 100. So I wouldn't say that he had a bad game. He just made some poor decisions in the first half. But remember us talking about how Oklahoma hadn't faced anyone all year. And as a team, it kind of was feeling that way.
Yeah, and that showed. And whether it's fair or not, Chris, when your defense is that bad, you really can't afford to make a mistake. If you broke down, I guess, the whole film on Murray, he wasn't horrendous. But you literally have to be perfect when your defense ain't stopping anyone. So the story on me is I'm at the game, and it's just, I'll break down the huge momentum play, and then I'll break down me leaving. When Texas does score that huge Hollywood Brown touchdown, and I missed my pick. I predicted 250-yard-plus touchdowns by Hollywood Brown. I only got one. That was a gutsy pick, but I came up a little bit short. But, man, that dude's fast. So he catches the touchdown. The crowd gets back into the game. The defense gets a three and out, which may have been the only ones all game. And then Oklahoma gets the ball back, and Murray's scrambling for a play with, momentum on the crowd and everything. And I believe he just tried to maybe plant his foot and pivot in the pocket. And he put the ball down on the ground to try and pivot himself. And as he did that, he basically just caused a very awkward fumble. At first, I was kind of, maybe someone bumped him, maybe his knee was down. But you know, and a couple people were confused at the stadium about that too, but if you put the ball down the ground by yourself and you're not touched, you can't be ruled down because you put the ball down on the ground yourself. So after that play, you know, the whole place is ticked off. Texas gets the ball and scores, and so I leave. I leave the stadium down 21. I'm like, screw this. And I start walking around trying to find a beer garden for new TVs for the different games. And after walking around aimlessly, and apparently they don't have many TV areas in the Texas State Fair as big as it is, I wind up going back to the place where I was watching the game, where I was at before the game, like we were pre-gaming. And the guy I invited, he was there too. He's like, hey, get over here. So we go back to the table. And as I get back to the table, I see Oklahoma drive and score to tie the game. And I was like, oh, my God, like what just happened? And of course, it's too good to be. Well, actually, no. The Oklahoma scored to get down 7. They stopped Texas scoring and tied up. And I was like, you know. And then of course, you know, they couldn't quite make a final stand. But it was, and I'm surrounded by people like, I can't believe I left the game. I'm like, well, you know, maybe it's the karma superstitious part of, you know, just stay out of here, you know, let it ride. Because I think you're actually allowed to go back into the stadium. But by the time I would have got there and had to run everything, but. It was a hell of a day.
Right.
Unfortunately, the outcome, and I'll throw it back to you, is that the head coach, or not the head coach, the defense coach got fired. Mr. Stoops is gone. You know, it maybe had to be a little bit of a tough call with, you know, Bob Stoops being the former head coach and, you know, firing a brother. That probably wasn't the best conversation. But Lincoln Riley, the Oklahoma head coach, who a lot of people think could potentially be an NFL coach one day due to his offensive mind, dude, you got to put yourself first. And obviously you don't want to fire your DC middle of the year, but for that performance you had in the situation it was, you can't really blame that decision for happening. You know, the Georgia game is still probably lingering in the back of their heads from how that defense kind of hurt them there. And now you have this happen. It's like, well, he got to switch up some type of defense, Chris. And unfortunately he was fired last night around, I don't know, I think it was 7 o'clock when the news broke.
Yeah. And you still didn't give any credit to the Texas quarterback that you've been ragging on when we've talked about Texas. Can you give him a little credit? He had a pretty damn good game. That's probably going to be his best game ever.
He did. His throws were sharp. I mean, granted, his wide receivers were open, but there's something to be said for, because he is a college quarterback, making those accurate passes. He didn't really – yeah, he kept his emotions, you know, within check, and – he made a lot of smart plays. Now, obviously, when you kind of have a rhythm going with your offense, I think the team plays overall together better. But the quarterback is the one that controls that from start to finish. So I will, yeah, got to give him credit for a guy that was ripped to shreds last year because he basically, you know, legs down and pissed a couple of games on his leg with blowing a game at Texas Tech and having awful interceptions against Oklahoma State. He finally had maybe a game that could help him continue to maybe become a better passer. Because last year was, man, Texas's defense is awesome, but the quarterback can't make a pass to save his life, and this kid sucks. Being your big rival, staying undefeated at the state fair venue, that's a game that can only help his confidence grow, Chris.
Yeah, and I don't really think the quarterbacks are to blame much in this game. If you look at the whole game, positive or negative, both of them had really solid games. There was just like 2 mistakes that I saw that really stood out, though, on the Oklahoma side, obviously, with Murray. Like you said, that I've seen that happen before, too, and someone's put their hand down. I think it was I want to say it was Cordell Stewart or somebody did that where they literally used the ball to get off. I have seen that, but I also remember, like, in the back of my head when he did it, like, that was cool, but that I could see how that could be an issue, and I haven't seen it since. And then I saw it on Saturday, and that's the issue part of it. So I guess I've seen that play twice. One worked and one didn't, and Murray's didn't. But you know, to say he didn't have a horrendous game is kind of – I think it's a little undercutting him. I mean, he did – he accumulated 5 touchdowns. Had 400 yards all purpose, had that big run, helped them come back in the game. So I don't really think he had that bad of a game. I think the defenses were just, it was Big 12 defense. You know, I mean, that's what it looked like on the field. But kudos for the Sooners to actually making it a good game at the end there. That shocked me too. I turned the channel a little bit for a while, and then I looked. I said, they're driving. Let's see. And I look, and then, you know, he went on that big, what was it, a 50 or 60 yard run or whatever. I go, oh my God, this might happen here. I was like, they're going to come back. I think it was, 67 yard, 11 seconds. He took a 67 yard touchdown. And that's when I was like, okay, well, hold on. Let me just keep looking at this. And then it was like, all of a sudden, Oklahoma found a defense. They started getting some stops. They actually got some three and outs. I think two or three of them. So it was like, oh, okay, this could be something. But to Texas's credit, you know, they've lost a lot of tight games in the last couple of years. And really, if you look at the last maybe 5 to 6 years, even before Strong got there, their offense just could not turn the corner, and they lost a lot of tight games. Or they'd upset somebody that was ranked, and the very next week they'd lose to somebody they should beat. That's kind of been their thing for a while. And credit to Texas this time for not allowing that comeback to kill them like that, and to be able to mount a drive still. I think that was pretty good. That was pretty clutch of them, no doubt about it. Now, there were a couple other upsets out there, no doubt about it. Two of them that we've talked a lot about the teams that got beat. We've talked about LSU. They went down to Florida, 27-19. The best possible Florida team showed up that day. And also, here's another team we were talking about, more of yellow flag, taking a look at them, like what's going on with them, and that was Auburn. And, you know, we've documented it well the last 3-4 weeks, going, what is up with their offense? And Mississippi State, who had kind of fallen off after two losses, after a nice win early in the season, they end up getting it done 23-9. Now, sure, both those teams are at home, but still, they beat them cleanly. It wasn't like there was a bunch of, huge, like, random plays, kick sixes, and just random stuff to win the game. They beat them fair and square. I mean, even if the kick six happened, it's fair and square. But what do you think of those two games, man? And is it kind of showing the depth of the SEC? You know, the first couple of weeks we were talking about the Big Ten. Then the Big Ten struggled in the non-conference, kind of up and down the board, not all the teams, but some of them. And that's how you kind of judge a conference as well. And how do you see these? I mean, that, to me, I was surprised both of them lost like that. Definitely not as much about Auburn, but Auburn, 9 points. 9 points.
We kind of saw it coming, my friend. This is a team that freaking got out stat played by Arkansas, which is scary. Last week they played a team that no one could even name. If you're
that's really
about
scary, dude. That's super scary. If it was 4 years ago, it wouldn't be as scary, but it's not.
And then you can't like knock the doors off of Southern Miss, and like you beat them by like 11 or 12. You know, I mean, again, it was a coin flip from really winning the game to start off the year against Washington. You thankfully had a crowd that was basically a massive home crowd advantage to beat them in what was a close game where your defense played lights out. I'm just not sure. You know, the knock I've always heard is that, you know, for all the credit people give Gene Chizik, and this is from like podcasts or people or analysts or ESPN, whoever, is that he's really not that smart of a coach with game planning. He, like, outthinks himself. So I got to give him some blame because no one really saw this Auburn offense struggling this year. Now, there could be injuries going on, or maybe there's confusion, or, I mean, you never know the inside soap opera of a team, but this offense, Chris, was supposed to be pretty good. This is a team that last year was damn good, almost at a point there seemed like the best team in the country. You get a quarterback back who people are in love with instead. I mean, he's supposed to be the real deal. You lost your running back to the NFL, but you've always had a good system. Your defense is always good. I know we predicted a hard schedule for them coming up, but they really haven't hit the meat of their schedule. they've been playing games to teams that they're supposed to beat. So I'm just not sure what's going on. But as an Auburn fan, you got to be frustrated because your hopes for the season are dwindling down pretty quick because you're not even blowing out teams that you should. And Mississippi State is clearly no offensive powerhouse either. They've been in their own head probably offensively because they got a ton of love this preseason, which I remember doing our first show. I didn't quite get why. But they were getting tons of love, and now they can barely score 12 points a game. So they got a W, but, man, this is – I'm going to give that situation of teams that are more so struggling on offense, but then also flip it and give massive compliments to watching LSU Florida, who truly was just a great defensive game. That was like, you know, the NFL and college football, it's become such a pass-happy, who-can-score-more-point league. That LSU Florida game was two just legit defenses who are going to smack you in the mouth, make you earn every single yard you have to get on the line of scrimmage, and that was just a fun defensive battle. I think there's kind of a difference of two crappy offenses compared to LSU and Florida's defense who are just playing on a pretty elite level right now. So tough loss for LSU. They've had a gauntlet of a schedule too. They clearly didn't get outplayed much. I mean, they lost the game to Florida, but they had the ball there with the chance at the end to go and win. So, two teams struggling. Auburn comes up short, which we kind of thought was happening. And LSU finally lost the game, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to say, oh, I called it. LSU sucks, blah, blah, blah. Watch them fall back down. It's like, no, you lost to a team in Florida who was pretty good at home, and that was a fun game to watch. That's kind of my spin on those. But Florida and LSU, that's some badass defense, man, that for a sport that term's kind of going away.
Yeah, especially in certain parts of the country. By the way, in that Auburn-Mississippi State game, Fitzgerald had a whale of a game. I wanted to even date myself even older than I am by saying a whale of a game. But he ran for 195 yards, two touchdowns, and he actually passed Tebow for the most rushing quarterback touchdowns in the SEC. Which is no joke, because I heard about that Tebow guy. I heard that he can run the ball pretty well in that Florida system. So that's pretty damn big accomplishment, if you ask me, because Tebow was the guy, especially, you know, running quarterback. So just kind of walking us through some of these other upsets, Iowa State has a way of, you know, pulling off upsets every year or just staying in games they shouldn't. This time they upset Oklahoma State 48-42, and we really don't know who the hell Oklahoma State is. A couple weeks ago before that Boise State game, I thought I knew. I thought, well, you know what, they're inexperienced at quarterback and wide receiver. They did have to replace a lot. They had a nice run. I think this might be a rebuilding year. And they beat Boise State pretty handedly. Now they come back and take some L's, so I don't really know what to expect out of that, but a nice win by the Cyclones, no doubt about it. Michigan State started kind of climbing back from an early upset earlier in the year. ASU beat them. They kind of climbed back up, started looking a little better, and then Northwestern out of nowhere, Marshall, they show life. Like, oh, what do you know? It's Northwestern. They do have a good coach. They do have a pretty good program, considering they end up beating Michigan State 29-19. And it always felt like, watching a chunk of that game anyway, that Michigan State was just going to be able to overwhelm them at some point. And that point just never happened. It was like, what? You got them? No, you don't. It's over. Go ahead. Were you about to say something there?
Chris. Yeah, Chris, that's a team that was probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 minutes away from back-to-back beating Michigan and Michigan State, which is definitely something that's a hell of an accomplishment. I mean, you know, shit, they were up 17-0 on half at Michigan the week before.
Yeah.
So clearly, you know, there's something to be said for a team that, you know, is always just pretty darn good with Fitzgerald as a coach. That dude, I think he's going to be content just staying there. He's probably a guy that maybe could turn around a program we've talked about this year that are struggling. But I think he's a dude that just has, you know, he's good with Northwestern. He's happy with the job. I know they just built, like, a massive, like, I think like freaking like $9-10 million athletic facility right near campus to maybe help improve their athletic, you know, persona. But yeah, that's a great win by them. And them and Purdue, two teams that, you know, never have the talent Ohio State, Lower Michigan, won the Big Ten. But man, they have two badass coaches. They always play pretty well, and they're just a team that's going to cause whoever they play a tough game to beat them.
Well, and that's what the head scratcher, because they're 2-3 this year. They lost to Akron. They did beat Purdue early. Lost to Duke, who's pretty good this year, but they did have them at home. So they just got off to a bumpy start, and who knows, maybe they'll close really strong down the stretch. Another team that looked like, you know, a couple of weeks ago heading into the Notre Dame game, we were talking about they could maybe run the table, Stanford. Now they got beat 40-21. They got down pretty early and never bounced back, came out real nonchalant. Utah kind of had their best game of the year, no doubt about it, but they really whooped them. That to beat someone, okay, but you were on the road, Utah was, and that one surprised me. That one really surprised. I couldn't believe it. Now, Washington snuck by 31-24 over UCLA. You know, UCLA is not as bad as their record seems if you've watched some of their games. I've watched some of their games or chunks of their games, and they're not that bad. They've actually battled in some of these games. But it could be just looking ahead to certain matchups, you know, that could have been the case there. Kansas is a pretty good club this year. You know, for years we dogged Kansas. We even had them in our crafty pick this year. But they're playing kind of hard-nosed football. They're hanging in there for finally, basically. Because they hadn't been good since Mason, who was a former Minnesota Gophers coach. He had them kind of bumping in the 90s a little bit. But Greer had a kind of an interesting day, man. He threw for four touchdowns, but he also had three interceptions and had a fumble. So beyond Tua and maybe a couple other Heisman, you know, candidates, there were a couple that had kind of in between games where you're like, well, they put up numbers, but they didn't have their best game out there. So that's obviously a still wide open race. And as we get here, we're getting to the midpoint here at week seven. We're going to start to talk Heisman a little bit, but we don't like to, you know, get bogged down in percentage points and all that, like mid season. We're more, you know, looking forward to the first ranking, you know, for the playoff committee. But So we talked about this game too, and sometimes Vegas just knows, Marshall. 20-14, Kentucky takes their first L of the season at A&M, and that was the spread. 6-point favorite at home, and sure enough, they won 20-14. A&M is definitely a pretty good club. That Mond is coming along somewhat anyway. They're starting to really run the ball really well. That, I think it's Williams. Actually, let me check. He had over 100 yards. I know that. Yeah, he had a buck 38. That was a good win, too. And that's something that, you know, we did think Kentucky was going to fall off. I thought maybe they'd fall off against a different team. You were right with this one, with A&M. And A&M, you know, they battled Alabama pretty well. They definitely played Clemson really, really close, 28-26, I believe was the final score on that. Talk about some of these games that I'm mentioning here. I went through a variety of them. There was a lot of, movement and upsets inside the top 25 for week six, man.
I don't quite get this whole. Maybe you got to, like, bet West Virginia first half. I mean, again, they were up. I didn't see much of this game because I was obviously walking in circles, drinking beer, doing whatever at the state fair. But the score, it's simply 21-7. at half, and you're thinking, okay, you know, Greer's having a pretty good day. But then you see the second half, they just beat Kansas by the score of 17-15. So I don't know if there's a complacency, because I know I did see it myself firsthand last week where they made Texas Tech's defense look like it literally was a college against a pro quarterback. I don't use that term lightly. The dude can make pro throws. He's that special a quarterback. So you now had a second week in a row where I don't know if you get happy with maybe running down the clock, but Chris, I just don't quite get that. You mentioned the stats and he had a lot of turnovers. I do know Kansas, I believe Kansas actually is top five in the country in forcing turnovers as on a defense that are getting more talented players. But yeah, another week in a row where you just lay off the brakes, which eventually that's going to hurt you, because eventually West Virginia's got to play Oklahoma, Texas, and those are teams where you can't take a break or you don't want to have that mindset. So I'm not sure. So props to them. And yes, Kansas is getting better. I don't, and they're going to find some win this year, Chris. I'm not sure against who, but they're going to beat someone in the Big 12 this year because they are making progress. It's hard to see it, but yeah. Also, with A&M, that was a hell of a fun game. Again, tough defensive battle. We're kind of a 50-50 on this. You know, how many more games could Kentucky win in a row? Clearly, like I gave comments to LSU, again, Kentucky, nothing to really be upset about. You played a hell of a game. A&M's, one of their touchdowns was a pass that went through one wide receiver's hands and then went straight to another wide receiver who ran it. Kentucky's almost, they've also had those plays, Chris, that flip for them, you know, mm-hmm. at some point during their streak. Mm-hmm. So, you know, karma's going to go 50-50 on you. But then they lose an OT. I mean,
ask Conor McGregor. Just kidding. Karma's a mother effort. Just ask McGregor.
All I saw was the freaking video after the fight. And that's why I don't watch UFC. But anyway, that's a whole different story. But yeah, tough loss for Kentucky. But, you know, again, their defense is for real, and their running game's for real. So they're going to keep winning games this year. Again, not like you're saying they're walking to Tuscaloosa or anything crazy, but they're legit, and that's got to be fun for them because we haven't really said that sentence since we've been doing our podcast, and this is on, I think, year 8. We never talked about Kentucky football. We always talk about Coach Cal. That's a given. We probably talk about Kentucky as much as Duke and your Gophers, I mean, and Carolina, but football, hey, something's going on. And one thing I'll say about that, Chris, with Utah, is we talk a lot about how Fitzgerald or Brom at Purdue are kind of like those sneaky good head coaches that maybe don't get a lot of national respect. Of course, you're on a freaking blank on it. Utah's head coach is the same way. That dude is he's crafty. Kyle Whittingham. He's now 12-1 as in his bowl games. He's like 10-1 coming out of byes. He's one of those guys that maybe doesn't get the credit of like a Stanford or a USC or Oregon job, but that dude's a nasty coach. When you give him time to prep, he doesn't screw up. And Utah, they're a crafty good team that I would say they're maybe a step up of talent from like a Purdue Northwestern or that same kind of pesky club you hate to play because they're always going to be a pain in your butt. Utah's the same example of Northwestern, which you mentioned just about 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's interesting. And by the way, Notre Dame pulled away from Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech hung around, though. God, I think it was 17-6 at some point. And then Notre Dame just, you know, put the foot on the gas. Another good game by that Ian Book. And the running back, they definitely ran the ball very well. And now you're looking at them, and you're like, all right, week one, they beat Michigan 24-17. Had some stumbles offensively for a little bit there, then made a change at quarterback. I think it was actually injury right away. And then now they're just like, well, you can't take him out because the kid's playing so good. Put up 56 against Wake Forest. Then, you know, like put the pedal to the metal against Stanford, which is not easy to do, 38 points there, and did the same thing against Vo Tech, who's a pretty solid program and solid team. Here they are, Marshall, undefeated, 6-0. Got a long way to go, but they play Pitt at home. Then they have a bye. Then they play Navy at home, and Navy's not what Navy was the last couple of years, where they're actually they're definitely not that this year. We just talked about Northwestern. That's at Northwestern. But how at Northwestern is that if you look at the, you know, the location? It's not that far away. There's going to be a lot of traveling Notre Dame fans. They play Florida State at home, which is a tad bit of a rivalry game. And they play Syracuse at home, though. Syracuse sneaky. They are sneaky. They could pull an upset here. And then they close on the road on the West Coast with USC. So right now, just taking a gander, taking a look, and we know this is the college football regular season. So you just don't know what the hell's going to happen.
True.
But they got as good as any. I'd say they got the best shot to go undefeated, and that's including Alabama.
I mean, every game you just mentioned, Chris, they'll be favored. Florida State this year, the skill differential really isn't even close. Syracuse gets up for big games, but again, skill differential and true quarterback play and everything, not even that close. And obviously, Syracuse can't get up for every big game. They play if impossible. Also, credit to our caller last week, called in with the with this Pitt pick. He was correct. I unfortunately did not bet that one. I bet Cal, and Cal screwed me. But I got to give props to our guy breaking that game down. I saw Pitt won an OT, and I was thinking, oh, you know, golly, good for him, nice pick. But, yeah, back to Notre Dame, there's a legit chance they could run the table. Obviously, USC, that could be their Super Bowl because their year is not looking that pretty. But even though they don't have a conference championship, if they run the table, they're an automatic shoo-in for the Final Four. I know we've had this debate now about how, you know, you got to make your conference title. You do, you don't. Ohio State, Penn State, all that. But if they run the table with the schedule they have, that's like a 100% no-brainer, like count Notre Dame in.
Yeah, because a lot of those debates we had a couple years ago with TCU and Baylor who weren't really playing shit, especially Baylor. You know, that a lot of the debates were that. It wasn't so much, yeah, the conference final would have been a nice boost to go in and possibly help them, no doubt about it. They could have also lost those games too. But a lot of it had to do with the schedule and the non-conference schedule where you're like, guys, Baylor, you're not playing anybody. So sorry, but you can't do it, you know. And then, of course, came down to the loss too, 6-6. Iowa State for TCU. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard, and I'm not, you know, I'm definitely not a guy who's going to lean towards the Irish. You know what I mean?
Neither am I.
That's for damn sure. So,
yeah.
But you got to say how it is. So, another upset kind of upset anyway, Utah State and BYU. Utah State is really coming on 45-20. On a more regional note, Iowa and Minnesota had the old, you know, the old pig rivalry for Floyd the Pig. You can Google that for those who don't know what the hell I'm talking about. You know, the defense just got beat up for the Gophers. They got down 14-0. It was like 3-and-out touchdown, 3-and-out touchdown. It's like, okay, well, this could be a complete blowout early. That's what it felt like. Luckily, the Ghosts did kind of battle back, get it to like 21-10 at half, I believe. And then once again, it kind of looked like they were, you know, they got a touchdown, looked like the Hawkeyes were going to pull away. The young, you know, walk-on true freshman had some ups and definitely had some downs. But I like the way they battled back, to be honest with you. I did like that. You know, 28-17, got it to 31-24. I think it was 38-31 at some point. But then Iowa just, you know, just rolled us over. There were a couple of defensive breakdowns where you're just like, come on, dude. They didn't run. You know, we contained the run pretty well. The big thing for the Gophers is just not getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback right now. And a lot of fans want to see, you know, press coverage. They see Iowa playing or other people, you know, we happen to be playing Iowa that game, but they see other teams will play, you know, next week too, where the corners are all up on the receivers and they're pressing them and all that. But, you know, to play that kind of defense, you have to have a good defensive line, you know. You can't just play up on the wide receivers without that too, you know. So people have to kind of keep that in perspective. But I did like what I saw as far as youthful, you know, the youth on the squad. A lot of the potential that you're seeing kind of come true in games right now, instead of just on paper and recruiting and all that stuff, is on the offensive side of the ball. The wide receivers are making plays. Plays that we haven't seen wide receivers, more than just one of them at a time, make for the Gophers. So that's a positive. And also, what do you know? The Miami-Florida State game came down to the wire. I can't believe it. 15 out of the last 18 matchups have come down to a score. And it's almost like you don't want to get up. It's like you don't want to get up in this rivalry, because that's just like, yeah, dude, it's cool now, but wait till it comes around. And but this one was a different ball game, man. This one was different. It was 7-7. Felt pretty good. There was a fumble, which led to some points. And kind of one thing led to another. We had some turnover on downs. We're down 17-7. And then there was they gave a freaking punt return for a kick, or, you know, for a touchdown. So it's 27-7. Marshall, 27-7 with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. And all of a sudden, the turnover chain comes out. And there's a fumble. Couple plays later, touchdown. Two plays, the second play on offense for Florida State, interception, turnover chain comes out. One play later, touchdown. Before you knew it, that's 27-21. They missed a field goal wide left. We've heard that one before. Touchdown, four plays later. It was crazy. I mean, from – and they went up 28-27 with 11 minutes to play, after being down 27-7 with 5 minutes to go in the third. So it was 21 points came on that scoreboard very quick. Then it was about grinding it out. Both sides, like I said, missed field goals in the second half. But I did like how the Hurricanes finished. 10-play drive, eating up 4 minutes on the clock, and then a victory formation, basically like at the 7-yard line or something like that. So that was a really cool way to end the game like that. And the young buck, Perry, you know, he had to throw a lot of balls away. He probably missed a couple of guys, but he also really played well at spots, man. And he's starting to look off the safety. All of his touchdowns, most of them anyway, he did something. It wasn't just there. You know, he looked off the safety, made him veer a little left, and then had the guy open to the left or to the right. And so it was positive. Obviously, it's positive beating, you know. It was 7 years in a row before these last 2 years. And like I said, the year before that, not 2 years, you know, not last year, but the year before, the Hurricanes had gotten an extra point blocked. And they had the lead in that game and ended up losing that freaking game. And countless times you can go down this rivalry, and it seems like whoever has the lead, you're not safe at all. It's almost like, oh, you got the lead? Sweet, you're going to lose today. So to see the redshirt freshman at quarterback, you know, some bumps and bruises, but come out there and really look good, and the defense really poured it on in the second half as well. So big win for those Miami Hurricanes. What else you want to talk about here for week six before we get into week seven? Because there is some matchups, man. Georgia, LSU, Washington, Oregon. You talk about, you know, bang 'em up football, Michigan and Wisconsin. That's old school black and blue North Division type stuff. 3 yards in a cloud of rubber, I suppose, nowadays. It's not even dust or dirt. It's rubber. What else you got to talk about here from week six? Any game that you picked up and said, oh, dude, I saw the end of this game or something, before we move on to week six, sir?
Yeah. Well, I got to give my man Kiffin credit. They had a nice win. They're 1-1 in Conference USA. Florida Atlantic wins 52-33. He found something on Old Dominion's defense at Virginia Tech couldn't. So props for man, and Lane Kiffin, they got to get a win streak going on now. On top of that, unfortunately, Missouri lost. We predict that'd be a close game. Mizzou lost to South Carolina.
Yeah.
33-35.
Yeah, that was a close game.
A late game.
I saw a chunk of that.
Late game and field goal. Yeah, Mizzou has a pro quarterback in Drew Locke who will be in the NFL next year. But besides that, their team is just, they have not really found a rhythm. I said last show, they had the first 2 years in the SEC, they go to the SEC finals. And since then, it's just been, things have just gone backwards. Obviously, with the head coach Pinkel having that Hodgkin's lymphoma health issues, he had to step down. I mean, that's, you can't change that part of life. But with Odom taking over, his main point's defense, they haven't really had a defense. And offensively, it's like all they do is pay. There's just something that continues to go wrong. So tough loss for them. They're 0-2 in conference now. So you got to get yourself together just to get refocused and start aiming for a decent bowl game. I know they have 3 wins, but there's not really many easy games in SEC anymore. And all those teams they beat up last year probably want a little bit of revenge. Credit to our caller. Pitt won 44-37 in OT against Syracuse. So now whoever Pitt's playing this week, fade them. If they have Florida Dame, now Pitt's time is going to run away, and then when Pickett's blown on, you bet on Pitt the other week. They're such a weird bipolar team,
right?
But if you follow it right closely, from gambling standpoint, they can make you a lot of money. Oh, one other game, then we'll mention our crafty pick, then we'll move on. I wish I would have noticed this sooner, but San Diego State was a 14-point underdog,
yeah.
Which to me, we did talk about
that.
That made no sense.
We did late, but we mentioned it.
Yep. Yeah, and they won 19-13. I checked the injury report. I made sure the quarterback wasn't dead, that the coach hadn't, yelled at the team. that line was just blasphemy. And they go out and win the game in Boise. So I just, God, I wish I should have. I should have bet all I had on that line. I made a little bit off it, but, man, I'm answering my SDSU. And to finish on a very nice note, we're on a roll. We won 2 weeks ago. Last week was a wash due to injury reports that were, bell checked on us. UTSA, 20-3. They walked into Rice and said, you know what? I know there's a Houston Astros game right now, but we're going to put on a show ourselves. And the UTSA Roadrunners stomped the Rice Owls. And I mean, they kicked them, they spit on them, they beat them up, 20-3. We're now 2-0 in our last 3 weeks. 2-0. The ball's rolling, my friend. The ball's rolling. I'm feeling a 3-0 win coming up this week too. Let's go. Oh, our adopted team won too. The Raging Cajuns win, and you hit your crafty pick of the week, dude. Things are hot. Things are looking up, my friend.
And the Canes came back from 27-7. So it was a good week for me.
Yep.
Because if I hadn't won
Amen.
This week with the crafty pick, I probably would have been like, okay, so in years past, you wanted to listen to me. This year, we're flipping it. Whatever I say, do the opposite. Because that's the way it kind of looked these first couple of weeks, doing the crafty pick of the week. But we didn't have to go to that one. We like you said, we're on a roll. And once we get on a roll, I mean, the track record speaks for itself. Once I get on a roll, I get on a roll with these crafty picks. So so let's speaking of on a roll, I mean, that's the beauty about the college football regular season. Oh, you're happy about last week? Sweet. You got a game coming up. Washington, we talked about how they were a little lackluster. Maybe they were looking towards this game they got against Oregon coming up. We'll see how this stuff plays out. But we have number 2 Georgia versus number 13 LSU, Washington, Oregon, Michigan, Wisconsin, and a couple other games that we'll definitely mention, a couple other spreads. I'm already seeing a spread, 29.5 to my Gophers. That's nonsense. It should be at least 35, 40. I'm just kidding. So, I don't know, man. You know, it's really weird because right now, a couple years ago, under Kill, we were built defensively and our offense struggled. Now our offense can put some points up, but our defense, I don't know if it's like the recruiting scheme and we just don't have – we got one guy. The Gophers have one guy that has sacks on the defensive line. Nobody else on the defensive line has a sack. So what's that tell you? And he's a converted defensive end too. He was actually a linebacker. He was actually a linebacker when he first got here. So kind of funny how that works. However, there is a variety of other games we'll mention. Colorado, USC. Colorado got a nice little win last week. They're ranked now, and they're on the road, and USC has they're 7-point favorites in that one. Kind of a minor head-scratcher there, but we'll get into this stuff. But let's get into one of the marquee matchups. And usually when it's – I mean, let's be honest, you know, huge game in the Pac-12, big game. You know, if Wisconsin hadn't lost, it'd be that much bigger. Same with Michigan if they had beaten Notre Dame. That's a big game, no doubt about it. The ratings would be through the roof. But number 2, Georgia, and number 13, LSU. Whenever there's a big matchup in the SEC, it kind of just – it takes precedent. Now, you could say, well, Chris, I mean, LSU just lost. So, what the hell? What give? That is true. However, they're playing at home. They're playing at home. They're not playing at night, though. They're not playing at night in Tiger Stadium.
God, I wish they were.
I know, right? By the time the fourth quarter comes around, it probably will be. So it'll be night, kind of, but that really kind of defeats the purpose. However, it's a big game. Georgia hasn't had, like, a bunch of tough games thus far. They haven't really had tough games at all. You know, flashback a handful of years ago, 5 years ago, yeah, South Carolina would have been a tough game. Missouri would have been a tough game. Tennessee was kind of, you know, crafty, kind of tough back then. It would have been a tough game, not this season. This is the first real test for Georgia. The quarterback's looking damn good, no doubt about it. Looking like he's developed from last year. On the LSU side, you know, Joe Burrow, the guy who's kind of been kind of game manager for a while, then he broke out the last 2 weeks prior to this last game. And then at Florida, facing a real deal defense, which is probably what they're going to run into as well against the Bulldogs, kind of came back to earth, had 2 picks, didn't play that well at all. How do you see this one breaking down as far as, you know, Georgia, you know, it is their first real test. And we saw Oklahoma look really good. And then all of a sudden we looked and said, well, they haven't really played anybody besides Army. And Army, well, shit, it's Army. And it took them the overtime to get past that. How do you see this one breaking down? Because according – to the ESPN Football Power Index, LSU might not show up. They're 73.9 on the road. They got them. So it's like kind of a walk in the park here for Georgia. At least that's what they're telling us. Now, what are they telling us in Vegas? 7-point spread on the road. Yeah, it's almost a 10-point. Yeah, I don't know. How do you see this one break it down, Marshall?
I think that LSU's defense is too good to get blown out of the game. When you did look at Georgia playing Mizzou, their offense really didn't do that much overall. It was just a lot of weird, weird plays, and they all happened to break for Georgia. And in that game, Mizzou actually ran for 4 rushing touchdowns on them. So, I mean, for a road, Missouri is normally a pretty tough place to play. It's not like elite like LSU, but they're decent. That game was a little misleading from the numbers. And I think the main point of this game is the fact that, like I said, LSU's defense, they're not going to get waxed. They're at home. I wish it was a night. I wish freaking CBS wasn't stubborn and took it as their 2:30 game. But I just think that can LSU's offense do enough? You know, you have a game manager. You have Joe Burrow as a quarterback who has the confidence to make big throws. But if they can have just somewhat of a steady offensive game, I think they can win the game. It's just their offense has at moments been really scraping to get by. And maybe some of that's on Burrow with his accuracy. Again, he had a stretch of that Auburn game where he was like 3 out of 17. But he came up later in the game and won. I just don't think you can have a massive time off of bad passes in this game, Chris, because Georgia will kind of wear you out. So I think LSU's offense, they do know if they can win. So I'm going to pick them. But the only bad thing is that you got to win time of possession, though, to give your defense a break. Because LSU's defense is good. They're great. But you just had to bust your butt for a good 60 minutes in a hard-nosed game. So if I'll say this. If LSU doesn't win time of possession, I don't think there's any way they could win. Because you're asking your defense now to do the same thing again. And Georgia's a more physical team than Florida. I will believe, or damn near close. So if LSU can hold on to the ball and give their defense a chance to recover, I'll pick them to win. But if Georgia owns a time of possession, they'll have this game just because your body can't handle two real tough games in a row where you are outmatched a little bit by skill. So I will pick a LSU 20-17 win. I just don't know if I'd bet it because my heart's saying LSU win, but my mind is saying that Georgia's offense is going to be too much for LSU's worn-out D. So we'll see how it goes. It should be a very fun game to watch, though, a very fun game. Should be close and competitive.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's always tough to play in Tiger Stadium. And something that stands out to me, you can look at the stats, you know, for Georgia right now, and they're averaging 240 on the ground, and that's major. Right, that's huge. Compared to 190, both teams are known to run the ball. They, you know, their backfields are usually deep as hell. Every couple of years, they got a stud running back that you're like, oh yeah, this guy, yeah, he's a stud too. Oh, they lost this guy, yeah, but this guy might be better, you know. So the only thing is, when you look at stats, sometimes you gotta look at who are they playing. And we just mentioned Georgia hasn't played any. I hate to say high-profile team, but they played some okay teams, but it just seems like LSU's been tested more. But with that said, to me, LSU is like cornerback U. You know, the last 5 to 7 years, they've put out some secondary talent. Oh, don't get me wrong. Defensive line they have, too. In fact, thank you, LSU. I'll take Daniel Hunter with that extension. I'm not trying to rip them. They put out plenty of defensive linemen too, especially on the ends, and we got one of them. But they're giving up a lot of passing yards, which is a little troubling, especially with the play action. I do see this coming down all the way to, you know, I'd say down to the wire. I think it's, you know, once a week I usually bring up a game that I think the team that wins will have the ball. Whoever has the ball in the last possession will win. And I always preference that by saying either a field goal or a touchdown to win or, you know, the victory formation. But I like Georgia to just grind it out. The 20-17, I like that 23-20, 19-16. Something like that. But I'm with you there, or I'm not with you, I suppose. I am picking Georgia, but give me a good game. And, you know, LSU, obviously we know, especially being on their side of the SEC, the harder side, clearly, they really, 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 really need this. Like, really need this one. Because to lose back-to-back, that would be kind of crazy to lose back-to-back against the other side of the division. I just realized that. That's kind of weird. But they really need it. And, you know, will they lose back-to-back? Sometimes the sign of a great coach or a coach that's going to stay, and this is something we've talked about with this coach, you know, for quite a while since he's been there, negative and positively. A lot of negativity in the, you know, for the signing and just how they played last year or whatever. But the back-to-back losses, man, that could kind of falter their season and kind of kill some of their momentum. So I'm anxious to see how that goes. Now, Washington struggled last week. Well documented, we just talked to number 17, Oregon. So we got number 7, Washington, heading into to Oregon. Oregon has another home game, you know, against a quality team. They were up enough to put it away and didn't help me out here. It was Stanford. I almost forgot about that. Otherwise, what do we think of Oregon, man? What do we think of Oregon? They beat Cal, you know, closed them out pretty well last week. Are they still just kind of on the up and up, trying to get over the hump? Mario Cristobal was a guy who did really well in South Florida, whether he was recruiting for other teams or whether he was a head coach. Miami almost signed him. In fact, he was a assistant head coach for like 2 months, and then Bama gave him like more money and a better position, and he just went there. Like, what the hell, dude? You weren't even here for a year. How are you going to do that? Maybe he was just kind of bitter that he didn't get the head coaching job, which, you know, I get it. But he's a pretty solid coach. But how do you see this one breaking down? Washington, who can run and pass, and now Oregon can run and pass with what they have. As long as they stay healthy at quarterback, the proof is in the pudding these last couple of years under, Herbert?
Yeah, I think the effort Oregon put in for the first 45 minutes versus Stanford was a pretty darn legit good team. And I think Washington, it's almost like they've been toying with people, or maybe they've just been like winning comfortably but not flashy. Like all the games have just been kind of like, well, you had a good win, but you didn't really like blow them out the water. I don't know. It's like there's untapped potential, or maybe they're just Washington's getting a little too much love than they truly deserve, Chris. So it's weird. Sure. You're coming from a gambling standpoint or making a pick, you have kind of like, well, I think this team's better. Or I think that it's kind of like, well, Washington's doing all they need to win every game they play, and they have all the talent they need. Their defense is legit. Their quarterback is not elite, but he's above average for college football. And Oregon has a really, really good offense and probably should be undefeated. So I would kind of put this in the flip-the-coin situation. I'll take Washington just because I think they've been a little more consistent this year, and they haven't had a blowout win. But, again, it really doesn't matter how you win in college football as long as you do get the W. So I'm just going to go with Washington. It's at Oregon. Man, Washington's a three-point favorite at Oregon. My God. Ugh, I would not bet. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Jeez,
I'm going to pick – ooh. Craig. No, screw that. I'm going to Oregon. No, scratch that. Sorry. In my head, I'm confused. I thought Washington was at home. Nope. Taking Oregon, I don't think they lose another big game at home. So, yes, I will take Oregon to win. Now that I got all my ducks in a row, Oregon to win in a close game again. But at that home field advantage, sorry, I was confused with who was home and away. I'm taking Oregon to win. I just don't think they blow like they blew the Stanford game.
So you just covered your bet, basically, in about four different ways on me. What the hell was that? I'm going to pick, but I'm not picking, but I'm picking, then I'm picking, but I'm not picking them. But I'm going to pick them.
I am sober.
I don't believe it. I think you're still kind of, you know, I still think that State Fair, that Texas State Fair is lingering in your bloodstream.
That's possible.
But one of the last things you said was – Oregon's not going to lose another big game at home. And you stole my thunder there. course, you covered every angle, so you probably would have stole something of me anyway. But but I'm with you there. I'm with you there. That's actually what I think this game goes down to. Another thing, though, when you look at numbers, sometimes you got to look at them. And the passing numbers that Oregon's given up is a little suspect. And so their defense isn't that good. Not yet. And a little bit of correction with the Huskies. 2 weeks ago, BYU, who was ranked 20 and, you know, had beaten Wisconsin, they beat them 35-7. So that was probably their one quality blowout. I guess that I'm going to look for Herbert to make a couple of plays difference maker. He's probably going to make 15 different great plays. But there's going to be a couple different ones that maybe the quarterback over there, Browning, can't make because he can't get away from what's coming. Man, better defense on the road. Defense travels, though. God, I am stuck. I'm just going to say Oregon, too. We got to get going anyway. But, yeah, I'm going to go with Oregon as well. I'm with you there. That's a tight game, though, man. That is a really tough one. And then one of the bigger games of the week, no doubt about it, both one-loss teams, so you don't really want another loss, especially if you're Michigan on that side. Of course, you know, they are both non-conference, BYU for Wisconsin, and, of course, Notre Dame for Michigan, and that's looking pretty good for Michigan right about now, that loss, if you think about it, you know what I mean? So this one's at Michigan. And 113,000 or however many they can fit in that damn place. I'm sure they extended it again or something. 2 weeks ago, they rallied. We mentioned that earlier. They rallied on Northwestern, down 17 to zip. Michigan just, I don't know, man. I don't know. When are they going to break out? And the answer is this game. Now, Taylor's going to get his for Wisconsin. Stud, you know, one of the top, I'd say top, for sure top 10, if not top 5 Heisman candidate potentially. Obviously, it gets a little ruined because of Wisconsin. Nobody really thinks they're going to win the title. But this would go, you know, this would help them right here if they won this game. But I'm going with defense. I'm going with Patterson to have a breakout game, which he is starting to improve with that now. He's up to 10 touchdowns, only 3 picks, starting to get comfortable. Defense, running, and the defense for Michigan will just contain Taylor. You're not going to stop him. Your only hope is to contain him, and that's what I think they'll do. Michigan gets the W, and keeps their hopes alive for that Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, it's we talk so much about the time about like home field advantages and Wisconsin. I mean, they almost never ever get blown out at home. I mean, with that, you know, it just if they had just a slightly better quarterback. You know, okay, God, I'm all over the map today. Freaking Michigan's at home. Goddamn.
Hey. Stress. I even said their damn attendance, dude. I mean, how much more do you want? I said the damn attendance over here, Marshall. That State Fair has got you messed up, bro. I don't know you anymore, buddy, dude. I don't know you anymore.
My buddy asked me, he's like, what's the spread? And he's a Wisconsin fan. I was thinking it was at Camp Randall. But, okay. All right. God, I need to get my stuff together. Okay, with that being said, Hornibrook is not walking into the amazing Blue Stadium again to win. Okay, now again, they won at Kinnick at night. Hell, I'm taking Michigan just because I think their defense is still elite, like Wisconsin, a little bit better. And I think that Shea Patterson's now starting to get more comfortable under Harbaugh. You know, the first couple of games Michigan had this year, Chris, the Notre Dame game, the first half against SMU, there wasn't really a flow to their team. Obviously getting the quarterback coming in. Harbaugh's trying to fit his own system. And now you look at Shea Patterson's numbers. He's 95 for 138 on the year, almost has 1,200 yards passing, has 10 TDs. I think the flow that Harbaugh's been wanting is developing there. Now, obviously, last week when you're down 17-0, it wasn't there, but they still came back to win the game. So I think the Shea Patterson experiment's progressing, getting better. And with that said, I'll take them to get the win. Just because it's almost like you're pulling teeth for Wisconsin when they play an elite defensive team to score over 20 points. I know Wisconsin had a little bit of a good run there with their bowl game and how they start off their season, but man, most of the time when Kornberg goes on the road, you're just asking for miracles to happen for them to win a football game.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. I would have to say that is a true statement. A&M is on the road against South Carolina. We talked about both those teams in recent weeks. A&M 2.5 favorite on the road. That could get interesting, no doubt about it. West Virginia is looking to bounce back. You know, we won't know about West Virginia until like the last four games of the season. I looked at their schedule. So the last four or five, then it was like, okay, this is their run. So we still got to find out what kind of squad they are. However, they got to go ahead and kind of bounce back from the mistakes they made last week. So it's not going to be easy, though. Iowa State, man, we talk about them throughout the years, man. They're just a team that's not easy to beat. Colorado, USC, Colorado, an underdog, number 19, going on the road to Southern Cal. How do you feel with your squad favored by 7? And then we'll kind of, you know, get to some other, you know, hardcore barn burners and maybe some spreads that stand out, and then the crafty pick of the week as well.
Yeah, I think that USC is continually getting progressively better on offense. I think that the scoring is going to be coming easier for them. I think this is now the second tough test in a row for Colorado. They beat Arizona State last week in a tough game at home. Now they got all my teams and homes together. But now you have a second tough test in a row of USC. Because up until last week, Colorado played no one. Yes, they're undefeated, but your only true big win, most people would say, was against Arizona State, which is obviously something proud of. So can they, you know, get on a little bit of a streak here? Because kind of like Kentucky, I don't think many people were thinking Colorado would be undefeated in the Pac-12 at this point in the year. That was kind of like a, who are they? You know, they normally seem to have a couple of players go pro each year, but they're normally not a big team to discuss. I mean, the last time they were relevant was with the 30 for 30 on how a couple of years ago. I mean, this
well,
was
2 years ago,
two
they
years
had
ago.
A nice run, though. We can't forget 2 years ago they had a nice little run, though.
True, they've had a couple of runs, but I guess their consistency has been, it hasn't been there for quite a while. So yeah, I'll take USC to win. I just think I'll go with the college angle. If you had one tough game at home, I have to go on the road, and you're not really a proven team yet. So I'll take the Trojans to win because I do think they're going to be able to score. Now it may not stop people. It might be a game like they had against Washington State a couple weeks ago where you went on a last second field goal, you know, a miss. But I'll take USC for the win. I just think it's a little too much for Colorado early in the year. With what you just said quickly, I will take West Virginia -6. They're going to Iowa State, which is tough, but they're going to score, and maybe for once they won't lay off the gas. So I'm going to take West Virginia to beat Iowa State by a touchdown, and hopefully they don't just go slow motion in the second half.
Thursday night, interesting game, Texas Tech and TCU, both 3-2, both need a W. That's Thursday night. Really good game there. Friday night, you know, the Friday night games have been kind of interesting. I'll give a little credit there. You could tell the Big Ten kind of maneuvered away from those mother effers, though. A lot of people didn't like that, ruining Friday night and recruiting and all that. You haven't seen that as much this year. But Arizona and Utah should be kind of interesting on Friday night. Another game I was looking at, what was it? It was – I lost it. I forgot what I was going to talk about, but there was a decent game that I was kind of interested in. Anyway, I'll just shut up. Actually, you know what? What about UCLA finally getting off the schneid at Cal? Cal's favored by 7, but, you know, UCLA has been kind of – just they've been putzing along. They don't have a win, but I don't know, man. Maybe that would just be a shocker. Like, oh, you know, there's gonna be some shockers this week. We just kind of, even if it's tight games all the way to the end, and not necessarily a shocker. Pause. We won't get into that. Where is that other game? Oh, Nevada and Boise State as well. That's a late night game. Just in case USC just starts pummeling Colorado, you can switch to that too.
Sure.
There's another game I was thinking about, but what else you got for us here before we wrap up the show here? Oh, Georgia Tech and Duke. That'll be good. Georgia Tech last week, I think they threw two times. I literally think they threw the ball two times last week, and they piled up some stats, though. Yeah, they threw the ball two times last week, which is crazy, but they're the third team in the last 15 seasons with 8 rushing TDs in consecutive games. They put up 66 on Louisville last week. Duke and Georgia Tech, who the hell knows? Because it's the ACC Coastal, and you just styles make fights, like they say in boxing. And to me, that's a great little style matchup. You just never know how that's going to work out. I wanted to highlight that game, too.
And another pick as we wrap up. Northwestern -6 at home against Nebraska. I will keep picking against Nebraska until they win a game. I mean, Northwestern played a great game against Michigan and had a little bit of a falter at the end. They beat Michigan State. Now they come home. They do have a quarterback who's going to be a pro. Grant, Nebraska does too, but I'm taking Northwestern to beat Nebraska just because until Nebraska wins a freaking game, I just keep going against them. You know, we bet Kentucky for a couple weeks on the show because they were hot, and sometimes you got to just keep fading teams that are cold. And I think that's a pretty good example there of that. And yeah, you're right, Chris. Thursday, Friday night, those aren't bad games at all. Texas TCU on a Thursday, Arizona, Utah. That's a fun game to watch. And it's on ESPN, not even on the Pac-12 network. And Air Force, San Diego State. I would definitely look at San Diego State. So overall, even on weekends where we don't have crazy, crazy good matchups, we always get upset no matter what. Here's the bad news. The best game I could offer you for the crappy pick of the week.
The best worst
doesn't
game?
It doesn't have a spread yet because one of the teams is like 1AA. Alabama State's playing South Alabama.
Oh boy!
And I know that.
Let me see if I can
South
even find
Alabama, here. It's on ESPN3. It's at 4:00 Central. Alabama State, they look like the Hornets, are playing the South Alabama. I know they're the Jaguars. Alabama State's 2-3. South Alabama's 1-5. We don't have a legit line. I mean, I could find something else, but this is legit the worst game of the week. It's just without a spread. We might just have to go straight up pick a win. I don't know. But I think Alabama State is a tier below South Alabama.
Wow, okay. So, all right, this is interesting.
I mean,
why don't you, while I'm breaking this down, why don't you look for the spread just in case? Alabama State Hornets. Did that just pop up? Is that just like, hey, Alabama's good at football for the last decade. Let's just get some guys there, and maybe we can – it's like a practice squad. I think that's what it is.
They're in the SWAC. They're in the Southwest Athletic Conference. They got Prairie View
Thanks
and Grambling
for making my
as
point.
Some tough interconference foes.
Thanks for making my point.
I'm
going to
try
to
find a damn
spread
on this game.
All right. I think that this is just a perfect practice squad where they get a guy onto the Alabama State Hornets roster and they just take a look at him and say, hey, you see that kid playing for the Hornets? Yeah. Well, they got a tough game against the Jaguars. So how many Jaguars are in Alabama? I'd like to know that. South Alabama Jaguars. What the hell is that? Well, is there Jaguars? Am I just tripping? Is there Jaguars?
I don't think
Jaguars
so.
Jaguars in South Alabama? Yeah. Okay.
Not that I've ever seen.
Okay. Play Auburn. That's the only team Auburn put points on. The only team Auburn all year put points on. 63 points. They finally look good. And see, that's just scouting them. That's all. See, they play Alabama State. They don't even know it. Saban's scouting them in that game. Oh, my God. This Saban, I got to give it to Saban. This guy, wow, he really goes that extra level. South Alabama's had a pretty good season. Not really. They did play Oklahoma State. They played Memphis as well. They're playing in Lab Pebbles Stadium. So, I mean, that's legit. There's only 58 tickets starting as low as 13, according to Vivid Seats. They're at Lab Pebbles Stadium. So, I'm going to go, even though there's no such thing as South Alabama Jaguars, I'm going South Alabama Jaguars. I just think that they aren't as shitty. How's that? Have you found the spread yet? This squad sucks so bad that they don't even have stats up. There's no stats. So, hey, this makes up for two weeks ago, dude. I appreciate it. I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it. Even though I disagree with the mascot name, because there's no such thing as a Jaguar in Alabama, I'm going with the South Alabama Jags. They're a tough club. They're a tough club. That's all I got.
They
don't even have their stats list. They don't even have their stats listed. Obviously, if they don't even have their stats listed, that tells you a lot about the program. It's just an Alabama practice squad, dude. That's all it is. It's Saban, man. He's wise beyond years. He's wise beyond our years.
With all my Google abilities, I legit can't find something. This may be I guarantee this is a lower tier talent than Rutgers put on the field.
God. This is horrendous. There's one guy that's going to play for Alabama in a year on that roster, and that's it. The rest are just, you know, God bless them. Hey, do your homework, kids. Do your homework.
Yep.
You're not going anywhere with that. Do your homework, fellas. Get that degree because you're definitely not going to go far. No, just kidding. In football.
You know what's sad? When you Google a game and you don't get, like, a breakdown preview of the game, you know it's horrendous. When you Google in preview a point spread and you get nothing, you get games in prior to the season, it's like, wow. This might be the ultimate bottom of the barrel for this. And we've done the segment for, I believe, 6 years. This could be the worst talent of football players ever assembled on a
field. You got a Power 5 team, right? It's not even – I'm sorry. It's not even a group of five. You got to
It's the third tier.
Non-Power 5. It's not even
the bottom 15.
Group of five. It's not even the group of five. It's like the group of eight. And the Jaguars are not far. I mean, they're about – they're teeter tottering on the group of five right now, the Jaguars are. So they may fall down a tier.
If South Alabama loses this game, we might have to have a little bit of a memorial session for them after on next week's show.
Oh yeah, I got a lot of crow to eat. I'm telling these kids they're not going to be just do your homework. So yeah, I got a lot of crow to eat if I lose this. I'll tell you that.
Go South Alabama Jags. We might need to take a week off if South Alabama loses this game. And on that one,
I'm probably
going
to have to
go
to the game.
We'll be back next week breaking down the Hornets against the Jags. We're praying for a Jags win. This should be a 3-in-a-row game. Now, the points for it could be 25. We don't know because Vegas don't want to post it. But we're going just with a straight-up chalk win, South Alabama Jags. So, as always,
even Vegas is like, don't even touch this shit. Because if it blows up in our face, we're done. You shut down the whole casino. They don't even want to list it.
And on this note, we're just going to wrap up the show. You always want to finish on a good one. You always want to make your last golf shot look good or last basket shot look good. Finish on a high, because this is just you don't find this coverage anywhere else where you get to break down the Jags and the Hornets in a battle of who can be the fifth string backup quarterback for Nick Saban's offense next year. So thanks for listening. We love it. We love doing the show. We always have some pretty good picks. Like I said, take West Virginia to the window. That is my pick this week. I've been doing pretty well lately. So go with the Mountaineers and Will Greer, and don't take your damn foot off the pedal. Until then, enjoy your week. Enjoy watching football. Be safe and healthy. The boys are out. Peace.